Yep, we're ready. Hour number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, the game on this Wednesday. We bring in Tim Hasselbeck, who's been doing a lot of work on ESPN at home. The nice backdrop. I noticed he's got some game balls back there. Seemed like he was definitely working on that Zoom backdrop. Tim, how you doing?
Oh, great. How are you guys?
Good. How did you decide on how many, like, MVP and game balls? What was going to go up behind you? I mean, obviously a lot got left by the wayside, but how did you determine what was going to be in the backdrop?
There was a lot that, I would say I had some set design help from my wife and kids. And so, so it was kind of like, hey, it needs to have enough stuff on there that, like, I don't look like I'm a hostage with, like, nothing behind me. and not, like, too much stuff that it's, like, you know, distracting and cluttered and all that stuff. So I don't know exactly what's on there. I'm not in that room right now. But, like, the things that have gotten, like, the most, the most questions are, I have my helmet from the East-West Shrine Game. So it was like a Boston College football helmet with Colorado Buffaloes, Miami Hurricane stickers, like
Ohio
State Buckeyes,
that
stuff on it. And like that, like a lot of people have been asking about that. And then like one of the things that usually doesn't show up in the frame, because like the frame that I have versus the frame that ends up on air, you know, it's a tighter frame that ends up on air. So like the Berlin Thunder helmet, that's on the shelf. You know, people aren't seeing that. I might need to reposition that bad boy just to get some questions about the Berlin Thunder. But
haven't seen that one.
Yep, that's in there. Most people would not know what it is. And then you know, I coached this fifth and sixth grade football team this year, and they had a nice little year and went undefeated, and so the. I did tell the boys that I would get them on ESPN. So there's a picture of that team that's over the shoulder. That's a pretty good one as well.
Nicely done. I did see that helmet, and all I could see when I was looking at, I guess the last time you were on, was Colorado and Miami, the stickers on that helmet. I was like, what in the world is that? I didn't even see some of the other ones that you brought up. Pretty unique. Where did you get that from?
So that was the East-West Shrine Game, you know, and the, kind of one of the traditions there were that you exchange kind of stickers with, you know, the other guys that are there. So once you guys remember, Tom Ashworth played kind of a long time in the NFL as an offensive lineman. He was from Colorado, so kind of became buddies with him out there. So switched with, and you know, kind of the stickers that are on there, like, had a little bit of meaning to me. My father played at Colorado. You know, and so I had the Colorado sticker on there. You know, back then it was the Big East, and, you know, Miami was really good. We had a receiver, Andre King, I think was his name. He gave me that U sticker. There's a running back from Ohio State. I actually almost went to Ohio State. I mean, I probably would have gone there had not gone to BC. And so, you know, had those on there, and then, you know, I have a bunch of family from Cincinnati, so I have a Cincinnati Bearcat sticker on the back. So, like, some of the stuff, you know, generally meant something to me. And, you know, I had a teammate that was, you know, on the, you know, for the East-West Shrine Game that was there. So, listen, you know, somebody told me, they're like, you know, there's like a little niche industry right now of, like, you know, what's on everybody's, you know, bookshelves behind them. So I think I might just have to start just rotating stuff through. Like, Elizabeth has an Emmy award. I might just throw that bad boy back there and make it look like I won an Emmy.
You should do that. At least it'll create some talk. That'll be good. We've been – first, let me ask you, what have you thought of now through 8 episodes of Last Dance, 2 more to go this Sunday night? What have you thought? What are your thoughts since the last time we spoke?
So I'm behind on them. So
oh.
I have not been watching them in real time.
You've been too busy or what?
So, you know, I think usually it's like, because we're going to watch it with the kids. You know, my kids, which is interesting because, like, like they've never seen Michael Jordan play. You know, my oldest is 14, and so then my boys that are 12 and 10, like they've never seen Michael Jordan play.
Sure.
So like, you know, those first couple episodes where he's like cuffing the ball and dunking on some of those fast breaks, they were like, whoa, wait a minute here. Like, what's this about? So, you know, and I wasn't sure that they were going to love it. Like, I knew that I was going to enjoy it just because of the era that I was a kid and watching Michael Jordan and, you know, knowing about some of those games and, you know, the playoff game against the Celtics and, you know, that type of thing. So I knew I was going to like it. I wasn't sure that they were going to, but they have loved it. So I think, you know, part of it has been like we've wanted to make sure everyone could watch it together when we did. And so, you know, we're just two episodes in, and, you know, I kind of think that, you know, we just started getting into the whole Scottie Pippen situation in the last episode, and we've loved it, and my kids have loved it, which has been a little surprising to me.
Okay. Well, I don't need you to see the other six episodes that have been shown to answer this, because I've been posing this to a lot of the guests that we've had on, especially this week. Like, we had Herm Edwards on yesterday and Sean Salisbury on the day before, and just talking about a teammate, or in Herm's case, somebody you played with or coached, you know, mm-hmm. that was like wired, you know, I don't want to say wired like Michael Jordan. That's probably unfair to any, but just that guy who pushed everybody to practice, that was so competitive at everything. They wanted to always win, and they were kind of the driving force in everything you did as a part of a team. How would you answer that? Who was a player that kind of reminds you of that you played with?
You know, that was always just super competitive and
over the top.
Well, that's interesting. You know, like over the top competitive. Yeah, like I'll give you an example of guys that like. But I think there's just some. Well, use this as an example. Like Jordan plays golf with a guy he's playing against the day before he plays him in a playoff basketball game. And so I think that, like, there are elements of, like, man, he's just full go all the time, cares about it, has the intensity and competitive drive, you know. But, like, there's also other moments where you go, well, like, is that giving you an edge to play? So, like, I just think about some teammates that I've had that are, you know, Hall of Famers or will be Hall of Famers. So, like, Kurt Warner is super competitive, you know. Larry Fitzgerald, super competitive. Michael Strahan was super competitive. And I think that, you know, it wasn't necessarily like they were over the top. But, like, when I think about Strahan, I think about a guy that, like, completely reshaped his body late in his career to lose weight, to be more effective, and, like, to continue – to continue to try hard and practice hard and care, and it mattered late in his career after he had played, you know, 14 years of pro football on the defensive line. Like, that was always impressive to me. And, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, you know, was a guy who was always kind of trying to, you know, to get better. He practiced hard, you know, he paid attention in meetings, and, you know, some guys wouldn't do that kind of thing. And it wasn't like he was yelling at other people. I mean, he kind of went about his business, but he's kind of a lead by example guy. And then Kurt Warner, like, he would challenge anybody. Like, he would challenge the, you know, the offensive coordinator to be like, well, like, is this a good idea? Like, I don't think it's a good idea. I think this idea is better. And, like, there's, like, that competitiveness. So there's a lot of guys that have that. But, like, I also think there's always another side. And I bet you even with Jordan there was another side.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, and Tim, another thing you're going to notice, and you could probably see it in the first two episodes, is Jordan sort of, he had a great ability to kind of verbally ride guys, kind of making fun of them. And on one hand, it's funny. Like, it really is. Like, you saw him do it to Jerry Krause, and he's always all over him. And the lines he uses are really funny and clever, but at the same time, very belittling. And I wonder about your experience with that dynamic. I think we've all played with guys who are good at that. And I always ask myself, is that good or is it not good? Like, Jordan could do whatever he wanted, right? And, you know, his point was, I'm going to bring you up. He did it with his teammates in his mind to motivate them, make it tougher on them in practice than it's going to be in the game. I'm going to bring you up to my level of competitiveness, and I'm going to try to push your buttons that way. But some of it, you know, I can remember times where I was thinking, if I were the guy getting belittled, how would I react? Would that actually make me better, or would that make me worse? I don't know.
Right. Yeah, they're going to make you worse. I think that we're, like, excusing some of it because he's Michael Jordan, he's a great player. Like, I don't know any scenario where saying to the general manager, like, hey, you know, we're going to go warm up. You want to come out there? And then being like, we have to lower the rims, you know? Like, or didn't he say something to him, like, you're taking those pills? Like, you're taking those, like, short fat pills?
Yeah.
Like, unless it's, like, good-natured fun between both guys, like in no situation is that okay at all. So, look, I even think there's stuff that he said, you know, he called Scottie Pippen kind of like the best teammate he ever had and all that stuff. But there are also times when I'm like, man, you're the way he's kind of, he's saying, like, Scottie's wrong for doing this. Or Scottie, it's like, well, wait a second. There's 121 NBA players, you know, and probably, you know, 100 of them that aren't better players than him making more money than him. Like, doesn't he have a right to be kind of upset by that, you know? So, yeah, I think we excuse a lot of that stuff because it's Jordan. And I think that, you know, I think there just used to be a feeling that, like that stuff was, like, some of that stuff was okay. Like, I don't think it is. Like, I don't know that you're getting the best out of somebody by belittling them. I think you won't push them. You know, I think there was a part where he says to Tony Kukoc, like, he goes, it's because it's too slow. It's because you're doing it too slow. Like, it's one thing to have some type of constructive criticism about it, of like, hey, that's why this is not working. This is a mistake that we're making. You know, it's another thing, you know, to kind of, to be insulting. I mean, there's two very different situations there.
Yeah, some of it definitely comes across as mean-spirited. And I always thought the best teammates I had were the ones that really were funny like that, and you could have great moments in a locker room where guys are kidding one another. You know, a guy will dish it out but also take it back, and it's really good-natured. Like, you had fun telling the story about when the guy told your teammate told you, hey, it's time to shave the head. Tim, who's kidding who?
Yeah. Well,
you know, all that stuff. Those are some of the funnest memories we have, right? When we get back together as teammates years later, that's the fun stuff that we remember if it's done in a good-natured way.
Well, and I can tell you, like, two guys that I brought up between Michael Strahan and Larry Fitzgerald. Listen, Michael Strahan, I mean, years I was at the Giants, you know, O.C. Umenyiora and Justin Tuck and Barrett Robbins and Mathias Kiwanuka, there was this really good group of defensive linemen, and they were with each other a lot, and they had a great rapport. And so Strahan would make fun of one of those guys, but, like, they would give it right back to him. You know, it wasn't like he wasn't immune from, you know, kind of the locker room, you know, prank and banter and that type of thing. And a similar thing with Larry Fitzgerald. And I think that, like, you know, partially why, like, if you go talk to guys, you know, that have respect for him, it's not just as a player, but it's as a teammate and a leader. And it wasn't, you know, they weren't acting as if they were above everybody else. And so if that's a one-way street, you know, that's no good.
Yeah, that's good. One that comes to mind, because you get very small glimpse of it sometimes if you get a chance to cover the locker room. And, you know, the football locker room is so big. But I remember the Titans one time, the offensive linemen were kidding Bruce Matthews, and for people that have covered, you know, the Titans, they might know this. You know, Bruce Matthews, he had a lot of body hair, right? But this is the funny part is Bruce Matthews was okay with it. He had hair on his back, so the offensive linemen intentionally put a videotape of some National Geographic study of the caveman or something, and there's a guy walking around that has a lot of back hair on. And they put it right up next to Bruce Matthews' locker, and they're all snickering. Brad Hopkins and Scott Sanderson and some of the guys, they're all snickering. And of course, Bruce Matthews is not going to acknowledge it at all. He's going to do all of his interviews. He knows the media is in there. He's not going to even acknowledge the presence of this, even though he knows full well what they're trying to do. Yeah, I mean, that's some of the best stuff for sure, because he was comfortable enough to – he would dish it out and he would also take it.
Yeah, and so it doesn't look that Jordan was taking much heat over there with some good banter back.
Oh, no, I don't think they would have done that to Jordan. I don't think they would have done that kind of prank on Jordan.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, NFL analyst for ESPN. And so, Tim, we're all, of course, paying attention to what the current sports that would be playing right now, what they're doing, what their decision is going to be. But what do you think the conversations are like between the NFL and the players as they try and look ahead to have a plan in place? I know I saw Adam Schefter's tweet that the NFL has extended the virtual OTAs through the end of the month. At the very least, it was supposed to be through the 15th. But what do you think some of those conversations are?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of basic ones, which are, listen, if one facility is closed, then they all have to be closed. There can't be a competitive, imbalance. And, I think, I saw something that basically said, the clubs are going to be subject to the kind of the rules in their cities. I think it's going to make this really tricky just because, I mean, just look at it, Nashville's opening right now, Georgia's been open. But then you've got, the governor of Illinois basically saying, we're not going to have gatherings of more than 50 people until there's a vaccine or, an effective treatment. And so it's like, whoa, I mean, that changes things for the Bears. And if it's kind of, one shut down and the others have to be shut down, well, like, if that's the case for the Bears, then that's got to be the case for everyone else, even if, a city like Nashville is open. And so then I think you then get into conversations about potentially moving operations for a team. And I just think that's hard. The thing to me that, and look, I desperately hope football is here soon. But the thing to me is, like, we've all seen it. It's hard to get just a players' union to agree. It's hard to get just 32 owners to agree. It's really hard to get 32 owners and the union to agree. And then now all of a sudden, like, think how hard that is. Now what you're going to do is now you've got to get, however many governors. You're going to get 25 governors to also agree. And I don't know how that happens. I mean, I think the only way that something like that happens is that some states start opening up and it's met with good results. And so that some of these places that are trying to keep things shut down, the people that are living in those areas are looking at states that are opened up saying, like, what are we doing? And there's enough pressure for, those governors to kind of change course. I mean, I don't know how else it gets done, even with, the NFL and the union agreeing on various things.
Yeah, and I just kind of look at it, too. The NFL has been going about their business. They did a virtual draft. They've had these virtual OTAs. They did the schedule release. And so everything, albeit it's been altered, it's been different than we're used to, but they've continued business as usual. So I hear everything you're saying, but I also lean towards, I feel like in their minds, they're playing come September. They're kicking off when they're supposed to, whether there will be fans or there won't be, but the NFL is going to play. That's just kind of how I look at it.
Listen, I agree with you, but just think about the size of an operation. Right? Before you play games, you do have to have a training camp. So, you're going to have a training camp. Rosters are 90 people. Say they do a quick cut down, but still, you're talking about 60 guys minimum that are practicing. Then you had coaches, like you have trainers, you have equipment staff. You have you get to 100 people at a snap of a finger. These players are using the same showers, using the same towels. There's a lot of interaction. There's a lot of, there's that stuff that happens. And so, and then the operations to make those things possible, you know, are significant. So, you know, and then times 32, and then do that in states where, you know, they're hotspots, and or in cities where they're hotspots. Like, I think the NFL only has so much control over this. Like, I just, like, at some point they are, you know, subject to the rule of law of where they're located. And that's going to be tricky. That's going to be really tricky for how some people navigate that, even if other places are just completely wide open.
So as I shift gears a little bit, but I look at some free agents that are still available, and I'm surprised on May 13th that Cam Newton isn't on a team somewhere. I don't know if it's mainly because the physical aspect that they can't have a fit, teams can't, you know, put him through a physical right now, if that's holding it up. But where are you on Cam?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is, Chase. I think people are like, okay, he's had two shoulder surgeries and a Liz Frank injury, you know, with his foot. So, you know, before we go and sign him to a deal, potentially a starter deal, like Dan Graziano was on NFL Live with me yesterday and saying, like, look, you could maybe sign him to a deal where he makes like $17 million a year and has incentives. Like, that's still a significant year for a guy who's potentially a starter if, you know, his foot hasn't healed. So I do think, you know, a team having its own doctors, you know, get the real story on his medical situation is probably the number one thing. And then part of the other situation is that some of these spots have dried up. So, you know, even the spots where he could land and potentially be the starter, you know, there are places that have guys that, you know, they, you know, want to give an opportunity to be the starter too. So, you know, Drew Locke is a, you know, second-year player in Denver that they seem to like. And Jarrett Stidham, same deal in New England. And Garner Minshew, same deal in Jacksonville. So in this situation where teams aren't coming together, I think that adds to the delay.
Tim, as we wrap this up, we had we just recently had Mike Fisher on, and I asked him if him and Kerry were watching any shows, and he informed us that they're midway through Waco. The three of us have seen Waco, so I'll ask you, is there anything you and Elizabeth have been watching during all this? Any show? Anything,
you know,
on Netflix?
I haven't, but somebody, that's the second person I've heard talk about Waco. And so probably not nearly as uplifting as some of the stuff that I've watched before, from what I gathered from the people that are talking about
uplifting,
Waco.
Uplifting is not the right
not
word.
Not something we will describe Waco. Yeah, uplifting is not it. But nonetheless, it's good. It's good if you want to relive 1993.
So we I talked to you guys before. We're like big on that movie chick, and we kind of faded on the movie thing after a while. We did start getting into The Last Dance, I guess. You know, we're lagging behind. We haven't had the TV on much. Like, I think the thing that we've done a little bit of that I'm somewhat surprised is that played a little bit of golf.
Huh.
And I'm here to tell you that my daughter and both of my sons are already better than me. And so it's a little demoralizing.
Now, this is not miniature golf. You mean like 18 holes?
Yeah, we tend to stick with nine.
Nine, okay.
Walking,
it's a good number.
18, you know, gets a little long, especially for a 10-year-old.
Yeah, agreed. Okay. So,
but I'd say my golf game is poor to quite poor.
Well, if you're already losing to your kids.
And actually, the last time I played like a real round of golf was with Mike Fisher, and I totally embarrassed myself because I was kind of thinking, I'm like, listen, he's from Canada. He's always playing hockey. He's a hunter. He's had a bunch of injuries. Like, he recently had like a hand surgery. So I'm like, honestly, like, how good could he be, right? I mean, like, he can't be that good.
You lost to him?
And sure enough, huh?
You lost to him?
Oh, dude, it wasn't even a match. We weren't even playing the same sport, okay?
Like, Tim, how bad are you at golf? Maybe you need to be golfing with us.
I'm terrible, but, like, he's really, really good at golf. Like, really good.
Really?
And okay. I don't think he plays a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you want to think he would be good, right? Like, you're like...
I don't know. Those hockey players like to play golf.
They do, but yeah. Willie and I have done enough of these golf tournaments with Predators players, and some are good and some are not so good.
Are any like me?
Well, I was kind of making an assumption. Like, I kind of was piecing it together, like surgeries, Hunter,
yeah.
Canadian. I'm like,
sure.
This might be good. You know,
those are good dots to connect. Sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, sure enough, like, he could probably be on the senior tour in a couple of years. Like, he's that good.
I thought your scouting report was pretty good, but clearly you got some bad info.
Terrible info.
Wow.
Terrible info. He's an amazing golfer.
Oh, good to know. All right. Hey, good stuff as always. Thanks for the visit. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk soon.
Cool. See you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN's NFL analyst / expert, joins us Wednesdays at noon. More of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next. Good stuff from Tim Hasselbeck as always. Chase, you've got a game night on Friday.
I do. I do. Very excited.
I know
about
you're
it.
Very excited about it.
I really am. Look, I'm not even going to hide it of how excited I am to have Tom Glavine.
Well, you brought it up in the Tim Kurchin interview.
I did. I did. I thought that you know, he's full of stories. Tim Kurchin is, so that's why I brought that up. But yeah, so Tom Glavine will come on game night 6:00 on Facebook Live. Just the game Nashville. Go like that page, and you'll get an alert. And we're gonna just tell stories and talk baseball. And with a lot of the things we've been discussing, with you know, I mean, he was right in the middle of all of that in '94 and in 2002, as Tim laid out. So he'll be a good mind to pick, but the stories of, you know, those teams of the 90s with the Braves, I just can't wait to be able to ask some of that. So really looking forward to it.
I didn't know Mike Fisher was that good of a golfer.
I didn't either.
Willie, did you know that?
Well, I assume that anybody that's playing golf on the Predators is pretty good. I haven't seen too many bad ones.
Really?
It seems like the hockey swing is pretty conducive to adjusting over to the baseball swing. I'm not saying they're all good golfers, but they can usually hit it. You know, they can hit it pretty well.
Well, we've been out there many, many years with Brent Peterson's, you know, Peterson for Parkinson's out of Vanderbilt Legends, beautiful golf course, and all the players out there. I know some were good, but I didn't remember them all being good. I think a lot of them, I'm not even sure it looked like in the years. I remember.
But what do you consider good? There's a lot of different ways to look at
well,
that.
Well, I remember Jordan Tutu, for example, wasn't very good. I remember seeing some of his shots.
Well, yeah, but he could hit it. He could probably hit it 350 yards easy. I saw him hit one that was close. I mean, they had him do a kind of a longest drive. He absolutely crushed one.
Yeah, well, me and you can hit the ball far, too. It's just the problem of where does it land? What fairway? Is it the right fairway or wrong fairway?
I don't know Tim's
fairway.
Perspective of what he thinks is.
Yeah, that's.
I don't know how good you consider good.
He described Mike Fisher could be close to being on the tour. That's really good.
Yeah, the seniors tour. That's what he was saying. Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Is he saying he's a scratch golfer?
That's what it sounded like.
That's what it sounded like to me. It's pretty impressive.
All I know is I couldn't sit there and watch a guy play for 9 holes and say, this guy's a scratch golfer, this guy is, you know, very good. You know, I might have a different perspective than an expert on that.
Really?
I don't know.
You couldn't tell
from
9 holes whether a guy was good or not?
Whether a guy's a scratch golfer, I don't know what a scratch golfer looks like. I have my own opinion of what's good. I think a guy that is, you know, can shoot, has a chance to shoot par is good. Or if you bogey every hole, you know, that's not bad. You know, there's a lot of different levels of good and a lot of different levels of bad.
I'm bad.
Okay.
We know that level.
I'm
Chuck bad.
You're a whole nother level of bad.
I am what I am. See,
I've never heard you say that you could not tell if somebody was really good at golf or not. You've been around enough. You've been around enough of these golf tournaments. I can always identify who's good and who's not. I'm always looking for him to be on my team. Which, by the way, it's really cool. All I'm saying is
there's a general category of good. And then there's scratch golfer. And then there's could be on the PGA Tour. Those are different levels of good. I can give you a general level of what I think is good.
I'm always looking for that.
I'm just saying I haven't seen Mike play, so I don't know. I'm assuming that Tim is saying it right.
I was actually a little bit more surprised, or just as surprised, at how bad he was. I figured, you know, he'd be really good at that. I mean, that's usually professional athletes, especially, you know, quarterbacks, punters. Those type of in football, usually they're pretty good golfers. So I'm a little surprised by that. He's already getting whipped by his kids, man. And he painted the picture like Mike Fisher just beat him up out on the golf course. I was a little surprised how bad Tim was. I mean, he's not Chase. Don't get any ideas. I mean, he's not your level.
Oh, I'm not. Don't worry. I'm in a special.
Special category.
But I'll be the first to admit that. You know, there are some that they feel like they're offending me when they make fun of my lack of athletic abilities. I'm like, I'm the first one to tell you that it's something. I mean, I should be viral on YouTube for some of the things I can or can't do.
Well, no one would believe it. They would think it's a joke.
Yeah, no, I know. No, it's real.
That would be the problem. Is it the believability factor? I mean, he's just doing that to get attention.
Nope.
Actually,
no, he's trying.
Actually, that's a negative.
But he owns it.
Yeah, you own it. There's no doubt about that.
Nothing I can do. I mean, I guess I can practice a lot and see if it changes, but I'll stick to guitar.
That has been a hit on the show. In fact, we will have Friday trivia. Chris Mason is coming up at 1 o'clock, so we'll have a little bit more hockey talk with him.
John Hines tomorrow
at 11 o'clock, so yep. Keep that in mind. We had Greg Wyshynski on yesterday. Good conversation with him as we were talking earlier about possibly how many teams they come back could be in a playoff format. Marquise, if you have, I saw Brian Windhorst last night on Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter, or with Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter, and I've got to be honest, I was a little surprised to kind of hear him talk the way that he did about the return, or in his opinion, you know, I don't know what to make of a guy who's been covering the league for a long time, but Brian Windhorst, when kind of talking about the NBA coming back, Marquise, if you have that, let's play it. Here's his comments.
This is going to be a study in risk tolerance. We're not going to have a cure, and we're not going to have a vaccine in time for this season. So this is going to come down to the NBA building layers of protection. How much risk are you willing to accept? It's going to land ultimately, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but ultimately it's going to land on Adam Silver's desk, and he's going to have to make the call, and it's going to be one of the biggest decisions he's made in his career, and all of the sports commissioners across all the sports are going to have to figure out where their risk tolerance is. If Adam Silver called me and asked me, hey, you talked to a bunch of experts, you talked to a bunch of our people, what do you think? I would tell him, shut it down for right now, come back in the fall, have your training camp, and then play your playoffs. Crown your 2020 champion sometime in November, and then immediately move on to the 2020-2021 season and let football and baseball and hockey and whomever else be first through the door. There's this rush to be first. If I was Adam Silver, I wouldn't be in a rush to be first.
I'll be honest. I think Brian Windhorst is really good at what he does. I've always enjoyed his work. I just sat there just not understanding his comments last night. I really didn't. I mean, I just don't agree with that. So you want the NBA to basically hang out for what, 5 months, then return, do your playoffs, and then turn around and start up your season? It just honestly made no sense to me whatsoever. I get it. Brian Windhorst talks to people in NBA circles. I do not. I see no logic in what he threw out there last night. And quite honestly, I could kind of tell Scott Van Pelt didn't exactly know where to go with it either. What did you guys make of the comments?
Yeah, I felt the same way you did, that I was confused by it. But I also wonder sometimes, like especially people in his position, even though they're the ones that we look to for the information, if now it's just grasping at straws because they just really don't know. But yeah, I watched that too. I was watching SVP Live and saw that and had the same reaction you did.
My thought is it's a reflection of what we're seeing a lot, regardless of what it is with this pandemic. You have a lot of different dynamics at play right now, because now that we've moved forward to this point, and I think there's even some differences of opinion among the experts, right? Not everybody's exactly on the same page. We're still researching. We're still realizing there's a lot that we have to learn, that it's starting to create a lot of differences of opinion on where to go from here. And it's so hard to really feel like you have a good grasp on it. We said repeatedly on this show that, on one day I feel like, hey, yeah, there's a pathway here. If we stay on schedule, we'll be seeing sports. We'll be seeing hockey. We'll be seeing basketball. We'll be seeing baseball in the coming weeks. And then there's other days where I'm saying, wow, too many questions, too many hurdles, too many issues that I don't think we'll have the answers to, and maybe we won't be able to play. So I take it all in stride right now. Like you even have people like Peter King put out a tweet today. I think it's pretty interesting about, you know, the feedback he's gotten since he had a long interview with Dr. Fauci, who I think is a great, level-headed, consistent person, who across where he's been doing this since 1984. And you have a lot of people who are questioning what he's doing for some reason. Like he's got some ulterior motive and he's some quack or something. I don't understand it. I do get this. It's really hard to know which way to go right now and to predict the future. We all are desperate for information, but we're just not going to have any today. So whatever Brian Windhorst says, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion. It probably just depends on who he's been talking to. And you can have, you know, strong arguments made for a lot of different things.
Well, I have not heard that model. That was a first for me. Come back in, what, October, November? What do you say, September, October, November? Finish up and then turn around and start the season? I had not heard that. I've got to be honest. That made just no sense whatsoever.
Well, if you weren't going to have any type of roster turnover, okay, sure, you can pull it off. But you have to go. You have to have free agency. I mean, you have to.
Right. When are you going to do? Right. When's your offseason? What are you going to do? When's draft and free agency? And
wasn't there a similar scenario very early on in this process? There was a similar proposal for the NHL that would basically have 1 month that was the off season, that they would come back and finish the regular season in like July and August and have playoffs, and then essentially have the off season in October and start next season in November. Wasn't that out there at one point? Which that didn't make sense to me then, and then this makes even less sense now.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen starting the next season later. But I don't know about the start this. I mean, once again, and you're going to ask these premier athletes, they've been sitting at this model right here. What is that, 5 months? Nothing?
Yeah.
And then
don't see it.
Finish a season and then start or turn around and start a new season? I don't even understand that. But, you know, I don't know. Like I said, Brian Windhorst is – well connected in the league, and
I don't really buy that they're rushing to be first. I think all of the leagues, especially the NBA, the NHL and Major League Baseball. I think there seems to be some common communication between the three. I don't get a sense that the three are racing to get back out there first. If anything, they're being very deliberate in how they're going about this.
Well, Major League Baseball needs to be in a race to be first because time is not on their side. They haven't even started, and it's an outdoor sport for the most part. So,
but do you think they're racing to be first?
Well, I guess they're not. Racing is probably not the correct, but they need to be figuring out things quicker, maybe, than the other two sports.
But who can figure out things quicker? If anybody could figure out things quicker, they would. You can't figure out things quicker. That's the point.
I'm saying because of their dynamic, they haven't even started. They haven't even begun. They haven't played a game to their season. And it's outdoors. The other two sports are indoors. You're not going to finish up in November or December. I mean, there is a point where you have to bag it. At some point, either you're back or you're not. I mean,
yeah,
time is not on their side.
What did Herm say? The virus is out there, so the health people have to be the quarterback. You just run the play. You may not like the play, but that's the hand we're dealt, right? You can't just say because we're baseball and we haven't started that we have to race and get out there before it's safe. I admire them for holding back.
Right. At some point, then you have to bag everything. I mean, what is the –
Yeah, but not, that day is not today, though.
When is that day, though?
Yeah, but it's going to be at some point, sooner rather than later. I mean, baseball's not going to be like, okay, it's August. It's time to start talking about – like, we got to get back. Let's start this sucker up. I mean, it's not going to happen. It's too late. You're done.
Yes.
See you in 2021.
Right, obviously, but it's not today. You got a couple weeks here.
Yeah,
like Bill Daly was talking about in the article you referred to before, Darren, with Pierre LeBrun. They just want to get to phase two. They're just trying to get to a time where they can get the players back on the ice and working out in small groups, right? They have to do that before they can do anything else. It's a step by step, and they may not get to phase three, phase four. In full play. You know, that's all we can focus on right now.
We'll come back and finish up the third hour of Darren Donick and Jace next. So NASCAR is going to begin their season this weekend at Darlington Raceway. And we've been asking when these sports come back, what is going to be, how they're going to handle the media coverage. Chase, I don't know if you saw this. I was looking at NASCAR put out kind of their policies for the general media. And it looks like there's going to be press box access available to four reporters.
Yep.
They're going to have a reporter from the Associated Press,
which will be the pool reporter.
Yep. They're going to have two reporters selected by National Motorsports Press Association and one local or NASCAR designated reporter. Now, the question that we've kind of talked about in the past is, okay, it's probably, yeah, we knew it was probably going to be limited, but how do you decide on the other? How do you decide on the two reporters selected by the National Motorsports Press Association and the one local or NASCAR designated reporter? Like, how do you determine who that's going to be?
Because there are a lot of people that could fall in that category that
sure.
have covered the sport for a very, very long time. So, I mean, are you going to leave out Bob Pockrass? Are you going to leave out Claire B. Lang? That, you know, they've been around and they're there every weekend. So I'm curious. I don't know. I don't have the answer. I'm curious of how they're going to handle that. You may be getting to this, but Fox, they're only sending Regan Smith to the racetrack. Mike Joy, Larry McReynolds, Jeff Gordon will do the race from the Charlotte studio. So they will not actually be at Darlington. They haven't said what the setup will be like for the Coke 600 at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. But I
what's Regan Smith going to do?
He's going to be the pit reporter.
Going to be the pit reporter, okay.
Yeah, they're going to have one pit reporter, one director on site, and I, you know, a camera operator too, they will have camera operators, but they will have the director and then Regan on site, and everybody else will be back at the Charlotte studio doing the race remotely via the monitor.
Says all reporters must wear protective masks at all times, and their access will be limited to the press box only. There will be no grandstand, infield, garage, or pit road access. In addition, those media members must follow all screening procedures outlined in their event operations protocol manual. No in-person interviews will be available. All non-broadcast partner media interviews will be done via a post-race video teleconference, Zoom, with pertinent participation details available at NASCARmedia.com. So they will not have any access whatsoever. They are basically there, four of them, in a press box. And that's about it. And then they can participate in a Zoom call, which they could do anywhere. So, to be honest, I'm not even sure I know what's the point of being there.
Oh, I don't think there is a point. I mean, I
you know what I mean? For those four media members, like, what's
sure.
What's the point? Like, that's the only area you can be, and you have no access whatsoever. So, okay, what is your coverage going to be any different than whether you're sitting at home doing it?
Yeah, I mean, what, that you can tweet out a picture that you're in the press box?
I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I think that perspective is important, though. I think people are going to want to know, you know, what's the vibe? What does it feel like there?
The vibe? Well, there's no people in the stands.
Like? That's what I mean. That's a vibe.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
I guess.
Everybody, we've asked everybody about that. We've asked announcers about that. We've asked players about that. People are going to want to write about, actually, you have to be there to get the vibe.
Sure. I just, I think Darren brings up a fair question, though, because it's like, what are you going to do? You can't go to the garage. They're not going to bring, I mean, I guess you can't even go in the media room. Like, they're, you know, all tracks have
it says press box only.
Sure, yeah, all tracks have a media room. Now, one thing that they do is a lot of tracks, they bring the drivers in post-race to the media room, and they do have a drop from a feed from the press box. So I would assume that they'll bring the driver into the media room where they'll have a camera set up where they can do the Zoom thing, and those in the press box could probably ask questions from the press box. I'm assuming that. That's usually the setup, so I'm wondering, because I was reading about post race. That's they'll have a camera set up in the media room at Darlington and then at Charlotte, and that's how they'll do the Zoom call.
I mean, the best way I look at it for the four reporters that get picked is you just have a story to tell the rest of your life.
Sure,
because you're at the first ever event, sporting event, and you know, hopefully after this year, it'll be the last time you're ever at anything like that, and so you have a story to tell for the rest of your life. But what is the vibe? The vibe is it's quiet. Nobody's here. There's nobody in the stands. Down there in the pits is way, way far away from where I am right now. Here's a picture, and I'm done. I could do everything else from home. Like, I guess for me, the one positive would be what I said at the beginning. You at least have a story to tell for the rest of your life.
Well, I think people are going to want to tell that story. I think there will be a lot of people that would like to be one of those four people. I would speculate anyway.
Yeah.
Darren, you brought this up when we first started asking these questions about the bubble, right? Who's allowed in the bubble? Is you asked how you would be fair to all media.
Right.
Right? So you made it sound like there were a lot of people that would want to be there, but how do you be fair to the people that aren't there? I think they're trying to strike that balance while maintaining, you know, the guidelines that are set out there from the CDC, et cetera.
Well, I think there's people that will choose or opt not to be there, but I think if you do anything on a limited basis, I still think there's enough people where then you have to choose. I believe there's more than four people that would like to be in the press box for this race at Darlington. Therefore, now it may be less than a normal race, okay, but which means other reporters have chosen, I would choose not to be there, so I'm bagging out. But you still, the point was, you still have to choose. So let's say the pool is a dozen. A dozen reporters say, they raise their hand, like, I'm in. Pick me. You pick four. So you pick a third of them, and you have to tell the other eight, you're out. That's what I was bringing up. Like, that's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of people. There's going to be people that raise their hands, I want to be there, that are very, very worthy, more than worthy of being there and covering that race. They're going to get told, yeah, sorry. And how that dynamic would play out.
My guess is you're going to have somebody from Fox and NBC, because those are the two broadcast partners. The AP has already been mentioned, because there's the pool reporter. do you, I mean, maybe Claire B. Lang from SiriusXM, and there you go.
What about a local
right
person?
Well, you get the right. They get the local part, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Jack Arud, is he going to be there?
I don't know. What is Jack doing there? We haven't had Jack on in a long time.
I think he's doing SiriusXM.
Yeah, well, he was doing that the last time we talked to him, but gosh. Talking about somebody who's been covering motorsports for a long time. Okay, we'll come back and start the fourth and final hour with Chris Mason. That's next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.